You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, April 29th, 2012, and this is episode 66 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
From bladebunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And I'm your host, Thomas Ramore, from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And let's go ahead and take a look at the news. Our top story today, webcomic developer really makes it big. That's right. Malachi Nicole, the 8-year-old who has written the series Axe Cop, that started off as a webcomic and eventually became published by Dark Horse Comics, has now had it purchased, and it's going to be an animated series over on, that's right, the Fox Network. Nick Weidenfeld, the former Adult Swim executive who's now working over in the Fox Animation Domination HD block, says, quote, Axe Cop is one of the most creative, hilarious, and naturally viral comic properties to emerge in the last decade. I've hoped someone would adapt Axe Cop for television for years and couldn't be happier that we get to be that someone. Axe Cop has all the makings of an iconic animated series, and it will help set the tone for Fox's new late primetime Saturday animation lineup. And there's nothing more that I can add to that, folks. So let's go ahead and go on over, over to Marie, who's going to be talking about what's in the buzz. Marie.
Ah, thank you. All right, we got a couple of items in the buzz today. First off, Heavy Metal, yes, the Babe magazine, adult Babe magazine, is looking for cover artists, specifically back cover artists. It seems that they are doing a, according to their, it's come from Bleeding Cool and from DeviantArt.com, but DeviantArt.com specifically, that they're looking for specific artists to do a very quick turnaround of a couple of potential back covers for three special edition prints that they're doing for, or print editions of Heavy Metal they're doing for San Diego Comic-Con. So they are accepting photography as well as illustration, which is interesting, but it is only till May 18th, so it is a bit of a tight turnaround. And some of the, and it will be judged by Stanley Lau and Kevin Eastman. Yes, Kevin Eastman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle guy. So if you aren't familiar with Heavy Metal, it is about hot babes and with robots and hot babes with monsters and hot babes with other hot babes. And so there's a lot of hot babes involved. So if you are interested, you can go over to the DeviantArt page, which has more details specifically on exactly what is required. It's down in the show notes. And you can see if it is, in fact, something you want to do, because it could be a great opportunity. Our second story comes to us from comicsbeat.com. DC is launching an all-ages magazine app for the iPad and iPhone that is designed sort of to attract new readers and get new readers, little kids specifically, and in reading comics digitally, getting them into that. And because apparently moms like to use these devices now to keep their kids busy, and I have seen this actually happen. So they've combined this into a new all-ages app that will offer free comics and some other content, 6 installments of DC Nation Secret Files, and as well as a monthly mini-mag highlighting Cartoon Network programming. You can also buy new content for 99 cents, a pop. But if you'd like to know more about this app and its titles, go ahead and check out the link in the show notes. And that's all for the buzz. Back to you, Tom.
Terrific. Thank you, Marie. And now let's go ahead and take a look at what's happening in the business world with Eric.
All right. Big news in the business world this week. We start off with two articles on demographics. The first one coming to us from MTV News and our friend Sean Kleinfeld. He does a quick summary of recent research from McKinsey & Company looking at the demographic breakdown of people who use online media. Specifically, he points out that the online audience is skewed to the under 35 bracket, and saying that many of the online comic readers would be under 35 who use more portable formats and also are more connected. This is in contrast to an article from Editor and Publisher, our second news article, taking a look at the fact that lately the over 40 market has been flocking to the online sources for newspapers and media, in that you have the highest level of digital subscriptions from 65 and plus to newspapers. Now, there is a divide between comics and newspapers, but it's showing that the online media is now being highly adapted by over 45 audience. Our next article is a press announcement from Viz Media. Viz Media's promise is promising new innovations for digital content. It is a press announcement and doesn't have a lot of details, but they are talking about doing a large push into the digital media. More on this to come as we see more of what Viz gets into. Our next article coming to us from Penny Arcade itself is about the new online funding method called Gambitus. And Gambitus is a Kickstarter-like program-like system where you allow crowdfunding of various startups. The big difference between Kickstarter and Gambitus is that Gambitus actually involves investment. So if the product succeeds, you get a return on the investment. If it fails, you obviously don't get a return. It's allowing for crowdsourcing investment instead of crowdsourcing funding, where the crowdsource funding, all you usually get is simply a copy of the media or other rewards. Speaking of Kickstarter, we get an article from Bleeding Cool this week talking about the pros are really taking to Kickstarter now, and it mentions a number of pro comic creators who are now going to the Kickstarter format to fund their own project. This is a major sea change that we've seen. When Kickstarter first came out, it was downplayed by the pros, but now we have pros of Jimmy Palmiotti.
Palmiotti,
thank you. Scott Kobish and Ty Templeton and Phil Winsdale, Michael Zulu, Jack Estrada, Barton Lash, and Camelia Errico, all using Kickstarters to fund their own projects. So we're seeing a major shift in the Kickstarter environment. Speaking of major shifts, we have our final article in business this week coming from Bleeding Cool and originally posted on reddiff.com, talking about an Indian comic publisher that sold 10,000 motion comics for 20 cents a shot. And this is a large sale of any online comic. The publisher Planet 41 Moby Ventures sold 10,000 motion comics using the online format and using a very low price point of 20 cents. Now, this is for the Indian market, which we have talked about before, is a vastly expanding comic book market. And it just goes to show that setting the right price can actually affect your sales. That's all for Buzz, and I'll hand it back to you, Tom. Okay. Or that's all for business. And back to you.
Thank you, Eric. And we're going to go ahead and take our first break. We'll be back with more news right after this.
This episode has been brought to you by the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com. For over 7 years, the Rampage Network has brought to you almost 100 different webcomics and programming for people to enjoy. Webcomics such as Supernormal Step, Red Moon Rising, Garanos, Alan, Estray 3, Lulz, Blip, Commissioned, Toilet Genie, Plan B, and much more, all at RampageNetwork.com.
Welcome back to episode 66 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. With more news, let's go ahead and take a look over at our legal department with Marie.
Thanks, Tom. Our one story that we've got in here is a very interesting one, I think. Coming to us from GigaOhm.com, why is Silicon Valley silent on CRISPR? Now, what is CRISPR, you might ask? It is the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, a law that will, quote, make it easier for companies to share data from the with the government. On its surface, it seems to be pretty legit to help companies and government prevent and respond to attacks on any computers and on the nation's computers in general. But a lot of people are screaming that it is potentially more or potentially another SOPA replacement. Oh, it's his CISPA. Sorry. CRISPA. Oh, God. Okay. Sorry about that. I should have asked about that name, too.
Keep going. Stay on target. Stay on target.
We'll talk about new Nabisco CRISPAs later.
It's like CSIS. Okay. So back on track here. Yes. So, well, there are activist groups out there who are waving the red flag, saying this is just another SOPA replacement. The Silicon Valley giants that were largely responsible for putting the political pressure on the government to kill SOPA are strangely silent. So why are they quiet? Well, generally they feel there are two very different laws, whereas SOPA would have turned them into copyright police, the CISPA basically gives them the option to simply pass along data if they choose. And this is a big deal to them because there's constant attacks on their services, such as how the Chinese government broke into Google's computers and they were looking for messages of political dissidents and stealing code. But so it is generally welcome to have tools to help fight these incursions. But if CISPA is in fact the right tool for this, well, time will tell. So if you want to know more about it, check out the article link in the show notes. Back to you, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Marie. And now over in our education department, let's take a look at it with Eric.
Just a short article coming to us from makingcomics.com talking about writing scenes. This article goes through the basic way that Scott King goes through and writes his scenes. The scene, he shows how he uses Index to arrange and set up the various scene settings and how things go about, he goes about it throughout the process. It's a quick little article. It's good to read. And that's all we have for education this week. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you. And now let's go ahead and take a look over in our tech department. Our top story over in the tech department is talking about the future of tablets and how they're going to be skewing towards cheaper tablets as opposed to the high power system that we have now. They're over on computerworld.com. They're going to be talking about how a lot of the industry is going to be looking to spending maybe $150 to $200 per tablet rather than the high-end ones, which we currently have. Next over, we're going to take a look over at our friends at Archie Comics, where Archie Comics and Iverse are launching a brand new web-based digital comic storefront. Rather than using the comics system, which had been used for the iPad and iPod and the Android, they're going to be using an HTML5-based one and expanding out more on the web. And finally, over at GigaOM.com again, they have an article over there talking about why Microsoft's Metro UI can slowly kill the Android system. This is really more of a look at me, Microsoft, we're so great type of story, but it really does give a look at the way that both Microsoft and Apple have been integrating their portable operating systems with their main operating systems. A lot of the Metro UI, which is used on the news Windows Phone, is going to be incorporated into Windows 8, which is yet to be released. And with that, we're going to go ahead and go over, let's add something a little bit lighter with our tidbits, over with Marie.
Thanks. Our first tidbit, it comes to us from bleedingcool.com, is that DC's peel-off logo, it seems to be the beginning of a trend, or at least a trend in design, where there's a number of logos which have recently been cropping up with the idea of peeling back, previously reserved for things like, you know, one day only and, you know, other graphic elements. If you want to see the see the samples of the logos using this trend, check out the link to Bleeding Cool in our show notes. The other article we have here in Tidbits is the coming to us from, again, from GigaOM.com, that women are more likely to combine social networking with media. There's a bunch of other interesting facts as well on there, including that that younger people are engaging in other activities than watching TV than those that are 55 or older, with the exception of checking email. Teenagers use game consoles for 8 minutes per night on average during prime time, which is twice as much as the general population, and a variety of other very interesting factoids. If you're interested, go ahead and check our link out. Back to you, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Marie. And now let's go ahead and actually let's bounce it back to you, because we've got some people that are in the news.
Yes, we do have some people in the news. The first article we have here, coming from bleedingcool.com, is an interview with Jeff Jacques, the creator of Questionable Content. The article talks about much of the progress that he's made, and talking about wrapping up various storylines, and about a little about his process and his thoughts on how he does his comic, and sort of what he thinks about various aspects of his comic. Just how basically talk about his process. It's very interesting. The article is rather lengthy, but if you'd like to check it out, it's there, bleedingcool.com, on our show notes. The second and third articles are not quite as happy as that one. The one is a little more heartwarming. The other one's a little more heartbreaking. So we'll start with the more heartwarming one of them. Is that the comic artist John Romita Jr.?
John Romita.
Okay, I knew I was going to get one of these wrong. Sorry in advance. that is attempting to break a Guinness World Record for charity. He is going to be on Friday, May the 4th, at 11 a.m. at the Hard Rock Cafe in Las Vegas, Nevada. He's going to be attempting to break his own Guinness World Record for the most continuous cartooning to support the Candlelighters Childhood Cancer Foundation of Nevada, which is a nonprofit organization that supports and provides services for family of children diagnosed with cancer. He will be attempting to continuously sketch characters and sign comics for 50 hours, which would be beating his previous record of 48 hours, which he previously had done to raise money for his niece Jordan's care, who at age 2 was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and which then spread down her spinal column. Apparently, she is 12 years old and cancer-free, but still needs special attention. So if you can get down there, go down and support it. It's a very worthy cause. It is $50 for a head and shoulder sketch, or 25 for as many as 25 signatures on your favorite comics that he has drawn. So go ahead and check that out. For more information, of course, click the link in the show notes. The last one is a little bit less heartwarming, a little more heartbreaking. Apparently, the Jonah Hex creator, Tony DeZunga, I hope I said that right, is in bad health, and unfortunately he has suffered a stroke and he is dealing with mounting medical bills, but there you can help if you would like to. Apparently he's in the Philippines after his stroke and he's got brain swelling, and he's a procedure to try to stem the swelling. It's not helping and things are looking really, really critical, but of course he doesn't have insurance there and his bills are really, really mounting up. So he's unstable. He's got an infection. He has pneumonia. There's a whole bunch of other things going on. If you want to know more, check out the article. But they're looking to the comics community to help out a little bit. So if you are feeling a fan of Jonah Hex and you would like to help out, do go and check out the article. And it has information there on what you can do to help. So that is, with that note, not quite the happiest one, but it hopefully will get better. Back to you, Tom.
Viva Las Vegas. and on that oddity, let's go ahead and take care of the oddities which we have with our own oddity, Eric.
Eric.
Sorry, I had a slight connection problem there. Going into our oddities this week, our first oddity, which is actually not that odd, just a statement from the T-Hunt, the creator of Goblin's comic, that he is removing his comic from Top Web Comics. Top Web Comics is, of course, the comic listing site that allows people to vote for their favorite comic and allows people to go to the top or the bottom. T-Hunt is removing Goblins from that list because it has been sitting at the top spot for a number of months and doesn't think it's fair for other creators. The next oddity we have here
is coming up, coming to us from the Daily Cartoonist. And it is a statement from Grant Morrison that Batman is gay and that the gayness of Batman was part of the attraction of the character. So we have that statement. It seems a little bit of pandering to various communities. But Grant Morrison officially has declared Batman gay. That ends our oddities section. And back to you, Tom.
And we'll be taking another break right now. We'll be right back after this with our discussion panel featuring Eric Murray and over from Moonhawk Studios presents at msp.starshipmoonhawk.com, Mac Paladin. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with more.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and video show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to our discussion panel here at the Webcomic Beacon Newscast for April 29th, episode 66. Our panel today is from evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello, everyone.
From bladebunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
From Moonhawk Studio Presents over at msp.starshipmoonhawk.com, Mac Paladin.
Sweet Narf.
And fortunately, I will not be doing a brain impersonation. I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Let's go ahead and take a look at some of the stories that we've talked about and discuss them, such as over at goblinscomic.com. We brought that up because we want to talk. We've talked about some of the awards and some of the top comic type stuff that have been on that in previous shows. We want to discuss this one because, first of all, and let me repeat, this is an opinion piece, folks. This is one of the most self-serving articles I have ever seen. Yeah, it's a look at us. We're so great that we're going to take ourselves out of contention for a thing that we know is rigged.
Tom, yeah. But I mean, if you read the article, if you read T. Hunt, he is very humble about this. You know, he's not saying, "Oh, I'm so great." He's just saying he's trying to be like Girl Genius. I'm blanking on the name.
Phil Folio.
You know, Phil Folio took himself out of the running for help me on this one too. It's too early for me, apparently.
The Hugos.
Hugos. But he took himself out of running for the Hugos, you know, saying it's not fair that I get the Hugo every year. And so Dion saying, well, it's not fair that I get the Top Web Comic Award every year. The problem is it's Top Web Comics. I mean, this is my problem with all these awards, and this is the argument I've gotten into people.
Well, it's not even an award. It's a top list. It's like I would like to let somebody else have the top spot because I'm so popular now. I don't need it.
Yeah, and more than
I'm not bragging on the guy. I've actually seen him at cons, and he'll probably be at other cons that I'm at because he's in BC. So I don't want to say anything really bad in case he like finds me and like you know gets all angry at my face. So. But, you know, like, it just kind of, like, the way it's worded is I don't know, it just kind of could be probably better word. It's like, okay, well, we're definitely, like, you know, we don't like to dominate the top spot, so we're just going to go now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, now that we've lost it, we'll leave. It really does. A lot of the thing that I'm seeing here, I mean, it does seem to be a nice way of saying, you know, I mean, we're just going to go out of it. But we, like I said, a lot of this stuff is rigged. There are articles out there about how to use bots to bring up your popularity in the webcomic and these types of lists.
But see, here's the thing I always say. All the awards are rigged. There is no award that you can win that means anything. except that you've won the award. Who wins the Oscars every year? The movie that is most like Schindler's List every year. You know, it's like, it's not an Oscar award. It's the like Schindler's List award.
But the question is, Eric, what was like Schindler's List before Schindler's List?
I don't know, something.
I think that there's a difference between things like this, which are popularity based, and stuff that's like, you know, industry, or just because of how the value affects the different, like, perceived value. I should qualify that, perceived value, not necessarily by the people who get the awards, but by the public in general, because, you know, the public in general has different concepts of that from the creators and stuff. But, you know, like, there's, you know, you win an Oscar, there's still a lot of people in the world who don't realize that it's rigged. So they still place this like, oh, it's so great because it won Oscar, which is the top, you know, award for movies, professional award for movies. And so they're like, oh, it must be good. And then they watch it. They're like, this is crap. What happened? But, yeah. You know, the point of the matter is that they still went and saw it and somebody made money, which is the important part about awards.
Well, which as a social experiment, my comic Starship Moonhawk, we have at our height 1,000 fans. I'll come right out and say that. And I was competing in a contest to get an interview on another show that will remain nameless. And we beat out, you know, Eldon Cowger of Astray 3 and, you know, Scott from Dreamland Chronicles, simply because we had a more motivated fan base, not because we had more people.
Well, yes. I mean, but see, that you can go about how unfair and, you know, and how you, all of these can be rigged. Everything can be rigged. The point is, you win an Oscar, people go see your movie. You're in the top spot of top web comics. Many more people go to your comic.
Really boils down to.
So it's stupid to say I'm taking myself out of this because it's not fair, because it's never fair. Put yourself in and get the extra hits. This is value. You're basically saying, I don't want this extra money.
I don't need it anymore.
I got to say, I have a comic in the top 100, and while I do get some residual traffic from it as far as a noticeable referral, I got to say that, honestly, it seems like comics benefit the top list more than the top list benefits the comic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Unless you are in the top 25. I've had a comic go from the top, from a ranking of 35 to a ranking of 20, and the amount of traffic I got tripled.
It's exponential. The higher on the list you get, the more traffic you're going to be getting from it. But it really is. It is more, as you said, benefiting more top web comics or the top 100 than it is the comics themselves. And it is more of a situation of, yeah, I won't even say motivated fan base, because a lot of it, yeah, there are people who go through and have initiatives, you know, whether it be giving stuff away or art or to boost up the things. But it's just, it's so, God, I'm going to sound like somebody from the 80s. It's so bogus, man.
I was going to say, if I gave away artwork, it would probably chase fans away.
Yeah. But let's go ahead and go over to our next story, because we may have a lot of time, but we don't want to waste it. And this next one, talk about flashbacks, folks. Batman is gay.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's right. The reincarnation of Dr. Frederick Wortham, a.k.a. Grant Morrison, had his story talking about how Batman is gay. Now, let's go ahead and quote him here. Gayness is built into Batman. And I should be using my faux British accent on this one, but I'm not using gay in the pejorative sense, but Batman is very, very gay. There's just no denying it. Obviously, as a fictional character, he's intended to be heterosexual, but the basis of the whole concept is utterly gay. Okay, first of all, it's nice of him to say why, although that may have just been the quote that was taken. But come on, like, so he's heterosexual, but he's gay. Huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, this has been a conversation that's happened over and over again, you know, and it's, you know, Bugs Bunny is gay, Batman is gay.
Captain Kirk is gay.
Captain Kirk is gay.
Well, he's compensating for something.
Yeah, He-Man is gay. Okay, I'll give them He-Man. they've got a point with He-Man. But
look at that thing muffled.
In the fur bikini.
But if you go back to the original article, like you go back, drill back further, you can see what they're saying about it. And it says, he actually quoted the article as saying that he's very Plutonian in the sense that he's wealthy and in the sense that he's sexually deviant. Because apparently, you know, dressing in a bat costume is fetish wear, but, you know.
But yeah, only in a Joel Schumacher movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, apparently, you know, the Joker is as sexy as Batman and kind of like David Bowie. According to the same article.
David Bowie is sexy?
Well, he says on the back and the bottom, it's like a quote from the article that's on pinknews.co.uk. On Batman's nemesis, the Joker, he said, quote, he's Batman's perfect opposite. And because of that, he's as sexy as Batman, if not more so. I quite like him because he's a pop star. He's like Bowie. Quote unquote.
Okay.
I'm like, well, I don't know if I would compare the Joker to Bowie, but interesting comparison when you think about Labyrinth, but you know.
And like, he also, I mean, the writer also says that this very gayness was responsible for the near universal appeal.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, this is. All these women fancy him because they all wear fetish clothes and jump around rooftops to get to him.
And possibly there's a gay relationship between Batman and Robin.
Which goes back to Frederick Wortham. I mean, it really is. It doesn't. People are going to see what they want to see. I mean, it doesn't matter if we had a discussion not that long about what was it, Catwoman number one, where they have basically an S&M scene between Batman and Catwoman. I mean, no, you can't have it both ways, folks. Either he's straight or he's gay. I mean, unless he's bisexual.
Well, here's the thing, and this is the tricky part: Batman doesn't exist. I mean, he's not an actual person. He can't have a secret life outside of the pages. That's all there is to Batman. What happens in the comic? He doesn't go home every day, you know?
Yeah, any subtext there is going to be written by your own minds. And
after a long day on the page,
even if he likes, you know, slinky leather, that doesn't necessarily mean he's gay.
But I mean, it goes through to saying, you know, I mean, okay,
really,
well, let's see.
Strong women to beat him up, and that might be more his, you know, thing. There's girls who like that.
Well, to me, this whole article is like saying, well, okay, he likes being in power, and he's got this uniform that he wears, and I mean, at least he wasn't a character in The Village People. I mean, we could say every cop in existence is gay because of that.
I mean, look, you can always say that this is something that kind of annoys me I brought up Bugs Bunny. You know, Bugs Bunny, the cartoons were actually, you know, gay because Bugs Bunny cross-dressed and did all this sort of stuff. And it just is sort of annoying of someone. It's just neat to sort of link an agenda to something that everyone likes. You know, oh, you like Batman. Well, guess what? He's gay, so you have to agree with our agenda now. You know, or that sort of thing. And it's just kind of irritating. Can't we just
want to just roll your eyes at it?
Yeah, can't we just enjoy something for what it is and what happens on the page without saying, oh, there's a subtext there? I mean,
That buzzsaw sound is Bob Kane spinning in his grave.
Well, I'm still waiting for the article that says that Superman needs to be deported because he's an illegal alien.
Yes.
Well, he does.
Well, you know,
he's taking those.
Apparently, now that's not just kryptonite in Batman's pocket for Superman.
He's just happy to see him.
But you know, this is an issue. Superman is taking a reporter job from an American.
Oh, he could get really ridiculous.
Is that really is that really a job you want now?
All right.
On to the next story. I wanted to revisit the two stories that we had about John Romita Jr. Trying to break his own world record and the co-creator of Jonah Hex, the artist, Dizaniga. And I get the last name right and I'm blanking on the first name.
That's only because I couldn't do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tony I screw up Tony Dizaniga.
Yeah, Tony.
And the problems that they're having. When I was fortunate to have that interview with Neil Adams, I mean, we talked in length about how a lot of the older comic book creators, the writers and artists, are not even put out to pasture. They're just left to do what they can after all the work that they've done and some of the things that are going on. I mean, I wanted to bring this back up because for those who are going to be in Las Vegas on, it was May 5th?
I think it's May 4th.
May 4th, Saturday, May 4th.
Hold on. Let me just check. I think I've still got the article kicking up here somewhere.
Yeah. It's
It's May 4th at 11 a.m.
I mean, he's not just doing it to raise money for his niece, but also it's for the charity there for all these kids who have medical problems like this. It's the more work that we can put in towards these charity things, which I'm a strong believer in, the better that we can be, especially for those of us in the comic industry.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really, you know, it's awesome when people do this kind of stuff. It's, you know, what more can you say about it, really? I mean, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, it's just can't get down on people for raising money for kids with cancer. I mean, that's just a horrible thing for, you know, a potential parent, you know, like a parent, any parent to have to face, you know, even when the kids are grown up. Yeah. It's terrible. It's, you know, cancer is a nasty disease. And well, I've had coworkers that have died of it. And
even though it doesn't come out and say it, I mean, for those who really can't put the links together, I mean, this is John Romita Jr.'s niece, which means that for those of you who are Spider-Man fans, the great artist John Romita Sr., who did such things as the iconic Peter Parker quits being Spider-Man with the costume on the trash can, which was repeated in the Spider-Man 2 movie, this is his granddaughter who's having this problem. So, I mean, anybody who's a Spider-Man fan or a fan of any of the work that either of the Romitas have done, I mean, go out there, whether you can be it in person or the article will give a link to where you can donate money. Or, you know, a fan of Jonah Hex and the wonderful work that Tony had did for them and in creating this character and the other stuff they did, please give what you can.
Yeah, you definitely. It's, you know,
but whatever let's go, go on to something a little more contentious. Marie wanted this one brought up, and so did I. And that is the new DC logo being a part of a trend. Let's be completely different by being like everyone else, by having a peel-off logo that before the show, I mean, they've heard me rant because they had revamped the DC logo, which was previously the offset DC inside the circle with the four stars, to the new DC with the swoosh star around it, which they've been using for the DC movies during this time, to this. Now, I want to break this into two discussions because one is about the discussion of the logo design itself, and the other is about the reasoning why they may have done this. So, Marie, you're our design expert. You're our artist. You start off.
Oh, my God.
We'll talk about design logos.
Okay. Well, like, first off, I'll just say, like, okay, this is how I earn my living is design, and I do a lot of logo design, and I have very strong opinions on typography and design and how things should and shouldn't be done. And one of the things, like, first off, that I really hate is the fact that they've had to use gradients in order to make this work. And this is a thing with this type of peeling effect is this is reserved for certain other non-essential elements. Okay. Like the logo is considered pretty sacred and it's very essential. And because there's so many varieties of applications, you really have to keep it very straightforward, very simple, no gradients, none of this 3D effect, no drop shadows, none of that business. It shouldn't have any of that crap. Second off, the D and the C are not clear. And that's something that's really bad, I think, about this logo design. And if I was in the room with the other designers who brought it in, I'd be like, the D and the C are not clear enough. This peel back thing doesn't work because the C is not less important, is not more important than the D, and the D is not less important than the C in the logo because the company's name is DC.
Right. And so the C is actually obscured even further because they're using that and they're putting insets of the comic characters or whatever in there. So, I mean, you're really getting an obscured look from that.
Exactly. And that's actually, like, you know, generally speaking, a big no-no with a complicated logo like this. Like, this logo, as much as it seems simple, is fairly complicated as far as logos are concerned. And what, you know, it just grates my teeth. It makes my teeth hurt that it you know, that they've done this is something that was so iconic and so, you know, like, they probably paid, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for this. This just,
If I may throw an observation down there, I think that the new logo is about as bland as DC's new lineup.
Let's save that for the second part of the discussion. I got a reason.
Yeah, that's my main criticism of the DC logo. It's boring.
It is very boring.
When they came out with the new Star Swirl logo, the first time I actually saw it was Dark Knight, I think, was the first one that used it. I love the way that they threw together the Marvel Comics movies, the flipping pages, beautiful thing. And then DC came out with the pointillism and the look at the taking from old comic prints, where they used the dots to create the gradient colors, to pulling back to seeing the lights, which created the new logo. Also magnificent, beautiful. This thing, there is no action. There is nothing to pull you in. It is a bad design.
It is a bad design, and there's so many reasons it is a bad design. And I see what you mean. I just quickly Googled the DC logo and you can see it with the characters in it. As soon as you see it with a character in it, it just like loses all cohesion. Like you can't even hardly tell it's a D and a C anymore. It just looks like a C. You can pick out the C, but it just looks like it's being peeled back. And it's bad. It's bad. Like it's just like their old logo was better, way better.
Yeah. Well, I'm sending something in the chat, and I'm going to put this in the show notes. If you take a look at the history of the DC logo, just going back, the DC logo always sort of harkened back to the original logo. There was always a chain, and this is a very strong break with this sort of history of the DC logo. Now, there were certain times, such as in the 70s, when they broke with the logo because they thought their only comic was Superman. But it looks like an entirely different company.
Well, it was a circular logo.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The D and the C were clear, and they were still always really clear that they were a publication company and that they did, the comics, and they had the stars and the sort of that sort of thing. But it's like you look at it now and it's like you don't even know it's a comic book company anymore.
Well, exactly. And that's what it is. They've gone through, because they're using this logo for the DC animation, for the DC movies. They're trying to brand it as a multimedia thing rather than just a comic book company. But it loses everything.
They're either a low budget upstart Silicon Valley company, or they make Saran wrap type wrappers.
Yeah, and the first time I saw the new logo, I saw the C, as you said. The D, it took me a moment to figure out what that was. It looked like a peeling sticker. I mean, it's called a peel, but it lost all identity to it, which leads us – go ahead, because we're going to go into the second part of the discussion in just a moment.
I was just saying that, like, the peel thing is – no, you just don't do this for logos, period. Like, I would have been the person to kibosh it right off the bat. It's like, no, you don't do appeal. Just don't do that stuff. It's cheesy. It's just so done. And it's like, unless you're physically peeling something off the page, no. And it's just not, for a logo, this is just, No. So wrong. So wrong. So it's just disrespectful to the typography. It's not clear. It doesn't tie back to anything previous, which, we have observed in many trends that, like when you make a really strong break between product, like between your previous brand and your new brand, that's too far. It just gets too, like, you consumers can't make the connection anymore. They just can't do it, and they don't like it.
A perfect segue into the next portion of it, because a lot of it, realize that this new logo came out with DC at the introduction of the new 52, where co-publishers Dan DiDio and Jim Lee came out with their all new rehash of Marvel's 90s. And it really is. It was a break from the entire continuity of DC Comics, the entire history of DC Comics, to something new, something great. And
I'm going to argue with you here, Tom, because the argument against – a lot of people didn't like the 52, and DC's argument against that is simply, we sold more comics.
And they did. But let's go to the rest of the story. They sold more comics. They sold more number one issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The sales on DC's New 52, they've already canceled, 8 of their comics? And a lot of the rest of them are not selling that well. They've got, I think, maybe 9 that are selling well. And they were the same 9 that sell well throughout DC's history.
Yeah.
The rest of them are failing.
But they made more money in those couple of months, and they got people to look at their comics again. So isn't that a victory?
No.
No. Not a long-term victory. It's a short-term game for with long-term consequences.
Bingo. And
they've got this customer base, this large customer base that has been with them for a very long time, who has now suddenly been completely alienated because all of the titles that they've been loyal to are now suddenly being rebooted and whatever, and they're seeing the same story again, or it's the quality isn't there, or whatever they feel, so that they're not going to continue to support the company after those first few months.
Right.
And this is a very short-sighted view of things.
And this logo, to me, is a perfect representation of what we're seeing over there. It is something that, excuse my language, folks, it's half-assed, it's bland, it's boring, it's distorted, it's being lost. And DC, it's a perfect representation for the new DC.
Well, I was going to say that it kind of looks like the adhesive is failing on the D, so, you know, the comics cohesion... Okay.
Yeah. No. that's actually a pretty valid. You know, that's a valid criticism as far as logos are concerned. Because I mean, they're very symbolic. They're very much supposed to represent all of your company values and stuff. And it's like, you know, the fact that the adhesive isn't holding is, you know, it's not sticking. It's not a good brand value. It's not something that you want to put out there and say, yes, we're half-assed and we can't stick to anything.
And it's funny because a lot of this, because there was something I had heard. Yeah, you know, we always talk about this as a peeling sticker. It's, I mean, like I said, this is called the peel. Now, I've heard somebody over at DC say, well, actually what it is, it's the comic book page being turned back. No, it is being interpreted by everybody who just sees the logo as a peeling sticker, which means that your logo has already failed.
Yes, it has. And I don't...
It's a bad scratch and stiff sticker. I like the smell of stink underneath.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the logo, the here's the, and again, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
No.
You know, no one pays attention to the logo. What's the big deal?
What?
You know, that's just something we put up in the corner there.
Yeah. Oh, well, no. Logos and identities have very, very powerful abilities to create perceptions among your customer base. Yeah. And it has been proven time and time again that people like to be associated with strong brands. They like, you know, like athletes, what they hang their hat on for when they sponsor, like if it's Nike or if it's Adidas, it's got to fit like a certain profile of person that they're going after. It really does actually make a difference to what people perceive as being professional work and being perceived as a good investment. Because they want to feel that they're connected with a brand. If somebody's wearing a shirt, they're endorsing that brand. They're bringing those brand values into their lives. So that you want to create like positive brand value and brand recognition has huge value. I can tell you this from, you know, having developed brands for large institutions from scratch, is that, you know, like the ability to make that perception, to go from, you know, we went from a college to a university and we immediately saw huge, like skyrocketing applications because now we were a university college before, now we're just a university, but before everybody was confused about the university college and our logo and our name, now they only see university, so now we're being seen as something that's way more valuable, even though our programming really hasn't changed that much. It's just the name and the look and the feel and how friendly it looks and this and that and the other thing. It really does make a difference. People do perceive a brand in a particular way. When you take that brand value away, they start to doubt your product. Even if the product is awesome, they can be like, what the hell is this? Because it's something new. It's something they haven't experienced before. Like they don't feel they've experienced before, even if they have. You know, they're going to be going, whoa, what's this? Like, because they do. I mean, the hallmark of a great brand is when people want to wear it voluntarily and you don't have to bribe them.
And this isn't just something that's being hidden in the corner of a comic book anymore. This is the first thing you see when you go to a DC movie or you turn on the DC animated stuff or you go to one of their motion comics. You get this thing out here. Now, when they had the what was it called? I call it the Star Swirl, the one that came out just a few years back. I mean, action, motion, lights, everything there drew you into the logo, the music that was being used. It pulled you in and made you anticipate what was going to be following it. And then you were hit with the brand right there, DC, and you were set for whatever was going to be following. Then you've got this thing. Now, I understand because Warner Brothers, the parent company of DC Comics, did a reorganization after Marvel was bought out by Disney. And a lot of it was drawn more back into the company. Almost like a fear reaction as to what Disney Marvel was going to be doing. Because Marvel was always a smaller company, and they were going gangbusters, especially with the new movies, after having emerged from bankruptcy. And now they've got the powerhouse of Disney behind them. Warner was reactionary, and all this just seems very reactionary. And the logo, you see this at the beginning of the movie, or you see this at the beginning of a motion comic, or you see this at the beginning of a TV show, the whole multimedia experience, there is no action. What are you going to get? Oh, the logo peels back, or it reveals a page. There's nothing there to anticipate.
I do want to point out there's nothing that can save a motion comic. Just
well, not since Jack Kirby died.
Imagine if you will, the presidential seal of the United States. If they had replaced the bald eagle with a gray silhouette that was peeling back, and behind it they placed the face of the current president, I very seriously doubt that people would look at that and say, you know, that's the most powerful man in the world right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's take a look at Marvel's logo, because Marvel's logo for the long time was nothing more than the word Marvel in a block type, whether it be the long strip across the top of the comics, back from the older comics to now, which is just the small inset at the top. It's distinctive. I mean, what company is this? This is Marvel. And it's right there. And then going to what they did with the movie, starting with the Spider-Man movie, where they went through the comic book flipping pages. Again, that started off slow pages, building up faster, until you pull back, the comics start to lose focus, and you see the logo of Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a very distinctive type mark. It's clear. It's very clear. It's very obvious. It's very easy to distinguish. The typography is clean, if touching, but, you know, like, it's stylistically, as a logo type, it works completely.
Exactly.
For what it is.
All of the DC logos, well, most of the DC logos of the history, have been DC in the block letter, in a almost a athletic style lettering, the squared off corners to the most recent one of the offset DC to the star swirl to the four stars they had from the 70s. It always had something to make you look, and it was immediately identifiable. This is DC. There's nothing identifiable about this logo except the fact that it's bad.
It's just bad that it's trending, that people are copying it.
I'm looking at... Go ahead.
I got one last joke. I know what the logo reminds me of. You're peeling back the covers to go to sleep because that's what these comics are doing to
The article that we got this off of over at bleedingcool.com has three other examples of them in the DC, as well as the companies that made these. I'm looking at these... The Cellar Door Creative created Green to Guest, which is a green G peeling back, with the peel back being a leaf showing a blue sky, the rest of the G being a blue sky back there. That works for me because it's showing that, and it's keeping the continuity of the G there. So you can see what it is.
Yeah, the only problem with that is that if you ever wanted to use it in print, it would be a nightmare because of the photographicness. That's one thing that people don't think of sometimes when they design these logos with these photographs. It's working online, fine, no problem. But as soon as you try to put it in print, like in black and white, it looks like butt.
Yeah, and that was always what I was taught. Was
awesome, our letterhead.
Yeah, anytime you have a logo, you want it to look good in black and white, because black and white is a hell of a lot cheaper to do than color. The other one that I see here that sticks out is the Anatron Food Services, where it's basically a rounded off square at 90 degrees with the bottom peeling up to halfway up. And I think, I mean, it doesn't say anything about the company, but it's a very distinctive logo.
Yeah, well, they're doing it to the bug aspect of the logo. They're not actually messing with the type. That's why I think I find those two more acceptable than the G or the DC's logo.
Yeah.
Is like, the type is clear. You can read that. It's very clear. You don't have to necessarily get a literal translation on a graphic element of a logo. But the typography really should be clear.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the DC logo, created by a company called Landor, just... we could go on about it, about how bad it is.
I would love to see the creative brief on this. Like, they have to give one to the design company. I would really want to see what goals they wanted to achieve. I wanted to see. It's really the only way you can figure out if somebody's actually designed. Like, because I mean, the company itself, it's very easy for designers to get sidetracked by, you know, corporate people going, oh, we'll do this, do that, do what this. I mean, we don't like that, do that, and ruin what might have otherwise been a really good design because they saw something they liked that doesn't necessarily work. You know, there's all sorts of ways that committees and corporations and executives can ruin good design. Yeah. So
and I would like
what they were told to do.
Yeah, I want to point everybody out. We'll have the link over in the show notes. But the page that Eric had found from brainchildstudiosync.com talking about the history of the DC logos, you can see, starting off in 1940 all the way up to the DC spin, they call it, My Star Swirl, up to 2005, you can see the continuity there. You can see from simple but clean and the look that it has to the different owners that DC had. Compare them for yourselves and make up your own mind. I mean, I think it's pretty much the unanimous decision here that the new DC logo stinks, but it's a perfect representation for the comic company now. But let's go ahead and we're running short on time, so we're going to give one last quick discussion, and that was on our top story. I'm sorry, out of all the webcomics out there, all the variety of quality. I mean, the Dreamland Chronicles, I could see making a magnificent series out of. I so many others, even this one called Exern that I saw, it's written by some hack, I could have made a good series. But Axe Cop?
Really?
I mean, Axe Cop, here's the thing. It makes perfect sense. This is the guy's coming over from the adult. He's coming over from Adult Swim, right?
Yes. Which immediately says something about the lack of quality he has.
But I mean, that's what made Adult Swim money. Random insanity that had no connection to anything, no storyline, just weirdness that, you know, quite frankly, appeals to the college students who are up late at night and just want something absolutely bizarre. And you look at Axe Cop, and Axe Cop is that. That is exactly what Axe Cop is. Now, I don't know how you would possibly – I'm assuming they're going to get different writers on this. I can't possibly see you getting a 8-year-old boy to actually write a TV series. I can't see that working.
I don't know. A lot of what's on broadcast TV nowadays, I mean, you don't know. But,
I mean, if you're looking for – this guy's coming in and he says, this worked on Cartoon Network, and it did. I mean, we can say we don't like it, but it did work.
Well, and I joked about it because it's going to be on the Fox network. I mean, and with the exception of The Simpsons, which has gone through varying degrees of quality over its 20-some years, I mean, you've got Family Guy, you've got The Cleveland Show, you've got so many other – well, let's just say that the adjectives that I would use, I will not use in broadcast radio, which – and this seems – it does fit in with the rest of the stuff there. It isn't going to be high quality. It isn't going to be high-minded. It isn't going to be middle-minded. It's not even going to be low-minded. It's going to be down below.
Mindless.
Yeah, it's lowest common denominator.
Axe Cop has always had great art, and that's something I'm interested in seeing. How is the animation going to actually be on that?
I'm imagining something like I don't know. It's like we don't get Cartoon Network up here. We get Teletoon, but we have a lot of the same sort of shows. And it's like, oh, there's one Archer, and I imagine it's probably going to be like that.
Is it Archer on FX, which is another Fox-owned company?
Yeah,
it's a lot of it is bad Flash animation, mm-hmm. or bad animation. Period.
At the same time. I mean, hats off to actually getting this deal, that a webcomic actually got this deal. The guy, today is the day we don't remember names, but the maker, the maker of Axe Cop is a really good guy, and he really deserves to get this sort of success. I mean, he's worked hard. He has worked very hard on Axe Cop. Axe Cop is not, oh, I just get an 8-year-old to speak and then I make a comic. That's great. There's a lot of work of translating the insanity of an 8-year-old into anything comprehensible. So I think it's well-deserved success.
Fresh ideas that Hollywood has had with something like Axe Cop, which started off as a webcomic, they may be taking a look more at some of the properties out there in the webcomic world. For some of the things, this may be a stepping stone for some of us to actually have our properties looked at and developed.
Coming in with their own perception. Like I said, this guy worked on Adult Swim, so he's looking at webcomics and he says, what's most like Adult Swim on webcomics?
and they're going to go with what already works and try to see a webcomic that matches.
Well,
that.
Fortunately, there's more companies out there that do animation. I mean, we've talked about a lot of the quality stuff they've got over on the Hub and some of the other stuff they've got out there. So who knows? This could be the opening of a door for those of us in the webcomic world. And on that note, go ahead. You've got the last word.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say the fact that the art itself is inspired by Mad Bull 34 automatically makes it a huge plus in my book.
And on that note, we're going to bring this show to a close. So I want to go ahead and thank our guests with us, our other hosts and guests today from evilspacecat.com. We've got what's her name over there?
Hi.
Marie Carey. From BladeBunny.com, we've got Evan, Igor.
Igor is close enough.
We've got Igor Kimball.
I'll do my own. I'm Mark Falcon from Starship Moonshank. Moonshine, I don't know which one of them things.
And that leaves me. I'm not singling us to get my own name wrong. I'm Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Thank you for listening in, and we'll see you in the funny papers.